The Nature Conservancy is a global conservation organization dedicated to conserving the lands and waters on which all life depends. Guided by science, TNC helps farmers improve soil health and protect clean water while sustaining profitability. The organization is also a partner in the Dairy Feed in Focus program, an industry-led effort designed to help dairy farmers adopt climate-smart agriculture practices. To learn more, visit nature.org/Wisconsin.
You, your farm, your future, and most importantly, your time matter to us. Welcome to the Dairy Streamlit, brought to you by the Dairy Business Association and Edge Dairy Farmer Cooperative, sister organizations fighting for sensible dairy policy in Wisconsin and Washington, D.C. The Dairy Streamlit is a compressed, high-level overview of a Dairy Stream episode. We focus on opportunities and challenges impacting the future of dairy. I'm your host, Joanna Guza. Dairy Stream brings a variety of topics to you, and today our focus is on the basics and benefits of rotational grazing. We will cover environmental benefits, economics, common challenges, and resources. The Dairy Streamlit is a high-level overview of a longer Dairy Stream episode, so if you enjoyed listening to this episode, I encourage you to listen to the full episode on May 15th. Our guests today are Luke Peterson, Regenerative Ag Specialist with the Nature Conservancy's North America Agriculture Team, and Luke Wawernick, a dairy farmer and owner of Fairview Pastures in Wisconsin. Luke Peterson, I'll have you kick off our conversation. Can you share an overview of the Nature Conservancy's work in regenerative agriculture space, and what is rotational grazing and those environmental benefits?
The dairy industry has really set some ambitious environmental stewardship goals, including achieving greenhouse gas neutrality by 2050. And TNC is super excited to partner with dairy and other ag industries to help advance their climate and environmental goals by identifying and prioritizing solutions that benefit farmers and their communities and nature. So TNC is a nonprofit conservation organization. We partner with companies, dairy co-ops, and of course, farmers themselves on research and on projects to support adoption of practices that create operational resilience and provide environmental benefits. As far as some of the, you know, economic and environmental benefits of rotational grazing, so rotational grazing and different variations of it, it's really a system in which your forages have adequate rest and recovery between grazing bouts. So recovery allows a plant to replenish its energy reserves and really grow and deepen its root system. And over time, this can make that plant more robust and more resilient, and more productive. So rotational grazing can make your pasture more productive over time, which is going to reduce some of those imported feed costs that you have. It also results in more uniform animal impact, both in what the cows are eating and also where they're leaving manure. So over time, this is going to lead to more diversity in your pasture, which in turn creates resiliency, right? So through rotational grazing, you can kind of build a positive feedback loop that can help you save on not just feed costs, but also fertilizer, pesticides, herbicides, and also the labor and infrastructure associated with those inputs. From an environmental standpoint, you know, that higher production also means that plants are taking more CO2 out of the atmosphere. They're storing it in their roots and in that underground biological community. And we all know that this carbon sequestration is one important pathway to really slow down climate change. Lastly, keeping pastures and soils healthy means, you know, less erosion, less runoff of manure and ag inputs, which is going to have great benefits for our downstream water quality and biodiversity.
We also have Luke Wawernick with us. Luke, can you share when you started your rotational grazing operation and the layout of it?
So we started grazing in 2014 as we were transitioning to go organic with our milking herd. And then as I started getting more involved in the farm, I wanted to move more towards grazing the heifers and dry cows, and a little bit away from the milking cows. So we set up our pastures to be able to rotate into corn and winter wheat production, which has helped us to graze more cover crops, and then also having the established pastures. So on our 200 acres of pasture, about 100 are established pastures, 50 is winter wheat, and 50 is corn silage.
Now let's cover that ROI and economics. Luke Peterson, I'm going to have you go first and then Luke Wawernick add your experiences. But can you share the economics and ROI of grazing?
For a lot of producers, that's sort of step one in this process, you know, of figuring out, does it make economic sense to incorporate grazing? And then if so, how to do that effectively? I would argue that yes, in many cases, it does make sense. And that's really from several financial standpoints. So most of it comes down to cost savings, equipment and infrastructure. It costs a lot to purchase and to maintain and to run. Right. So when you think about the cost of preparing fields and planting feed crops and harvesting those crops and then delivering those crops to the barn and then bringing that manure back out to the field, that really adds up. So where in that system can we find opportunities for your cows to go to work for you instead? Right. So if those animals can harvest some of their own forage and then spread the manure back out in the field for you, you can cut out a major portion of those equipment, labor and fuel costs. And then, of course, we have animal and herd health, right, which tends to be higher in these cows that are outside using their bodies for what they're designed to do. So grazing animals get more exercise, they get less exposure to pathogens and diseases, and that can really cut down on one of the biggest expenses that dairies have, which is raising replacement heifers, right? So when you have more fit and resilient animals, there's a big opportunity to cut down on veterinary costs and also have longer lived and longer productive cows.
Luke Wawrnik, can you share the economics and ROI you've seen on grazing?
Yeah, so the biggest impact that we've seen from grazing, like return on investment, has been getting our animals out on pasture as early as we can. So I tried to get my heifers out at 13 months. We used to keep them in and artificially breed them, but then we moved towards using more sex semen on the milking herd and breeding with a beef bull out on pasture. And that's helped us to get more days, because I figure that every day that I have a heifer out on pasture, rather than in confinement, I'm saving a little over $1 per day. That's helped me to have about a $15,000 a year savings from increasing that time. And then also having more room in my facilities. So every farm is different. Where my farm, I needed a few more stalls for my milking herd. So I was able to increase those stall numbers and decrease stocking density, which has made a pretty big impact on milk production for my farm.
Opportunities come challenges. Let's talk about some of those common challenges or mistakes we see with rotational grazing. Luke Peterson, I'll have you go first, and then Luke Wawrnik, if you could add, what are some of those common challenges or mistakes you see with grazing?
I would say the biggest mistake someone could make is thinking that you can make rotation decisions based just on a calendar. So it's important to be adaptable and conduct some sort of monitoring to inform those decisions, even if that's just like visual assessments of forage height and growth stage, to decide when you're actually going to move your animals. So always have contingency plans too. So like, have you stocked at a rate that you won't be in trouble if there's a drought or you can't access a particular pasture for some reason? And then the other mistake I would say is moving back into a paddock or pasture before it's fully recovered. So this can be tempting, but it can also damage productivity in that area for the rest of the year or for longer. So if you find yourself in a situation where you're running out of paddocks to graze, and the first ones that you're coming back to haven't received that amount of rest that you're targeting, it's better to actually slow down your rotation. Maybe have to take that vegetation down a bit lower than you'd like, rather than move back into those paddocks before they're fully recovered.
Luke Wawrnik, what are some common challenges or mistakes you've experienced?
Some common challenges that you're going to see every year is during the summer slump. So planning to have enough pasture available and then have species that are going to continue to grow, even if it is dry and with that heat stress that happens. One thing that I've kind of made a mistake on when we were thinking that we were going to go organic and trying to get to that 30% dry matter intake is forcing animals to go where they don't want to go. So heifers and dry cows, they love it outside, but that milking herd, when it's going to be 75 degrees, 80 degrees during the day and sunny, they don't want to be out on pasture anymore. They want to be back in the freestall barn. And when I was trying to hit those dry matter requirements, I was forcing my cows out of the barn and it became stressful for me and for the animals. So that's kind of something that I learned, that now I let them out at night in the evening and they want to go outside. I can't get the gate open fast enough. So not forcing animals to go where they don't want to go, and then like planning for that heat stress. So knowing that a milking cow can't handle being out in the sun when it's over 70 degrees and having an area to keep them cool, and then having a plan for flies and mosquitoes and as those insects start to grow during the summer.
Last question as we wrap up this dairy streamlet. Luke Peterson, I'll have you answer first, and then Luke Wawrnik, you add. What resources are available to support farms that want to graze cattle?
Well, as you might expect, the biggest cost investment in transitioning to a grazing system is infrastructure like fencing and water development. So the Natural Resources Conservation Service is a great resource for cost share to help offset a good portion of that investment that you need. So definitely get a hold of your local NRCS field office as a starting point there. And then from the private sector, you know, as consumer-facing companies and others in the supply chain continue to invest more and more in meeting their sustainability goals, there's programs like TNC's Dairy Feed and Focus program that are available to pass on some of that funding to farmers who are working to improve the sustainability of their operations. So definitely keep your eye out for those in the area. And then on the technical assistance side, I would imagine a significant portion of your audience is in Wisconsin or the upper Midwest, which is a great place to be if you're looking for support on different aspects of grazing management. So Wisconsin has a great model for farmer-led peer groups that many other regions really look up to. And these are really some of the best places you can turn to get locally relevant advice and also make new connections and get connected to opportunities from the people that you know and trust. If you're in a state or region that doesn't have access to a grazer or farmer network like that, I would encourage you to kind of check out what these models can offer and maybe get together with your neighbors and actually consider starting something up like that. There's other specific resources, right? If you're looking for information on how to get started with grazing, so check out your local extension from your universities. They're doing more and more economic and soil health research. So that can be a good place to start. And then groups like Grassland 2.0 up in the Wisconsin area have a ton of valuable resources online to support grazing in the upper Midwest. So that includes financial calculators for different scenario, for example, custom heifer grazing that we talked about.
And Luke Wawernick, what resources are available that you've utilized to support grazing?
We've done a lot with the NRCS, and then also I'm with the NWTC farm class, and we have the opportunity to go and tour a lot of different farms. So maybe getting connected with your local tech schools and then talking to some of the ag instructors with that.
We'll make sure that we drop the links below in this description for you to learn more about the resources for rotational grazing. And again, this is just the surface of our conversation. So I highly recommend that you check out the long version on May 15th. I want to thank Luke Peterson and Luke Wawernick for joining us on Dairy Stream. And I also want to thank the Nature Conservancy of Wisconsin for sponsoring this episode. And I want to thank you for tuning in to learn more. I'm your host, Joanna Guza, for Dairy Stream. The Dairy Business Association and Edge Dairy Farmer Cooperative would like to thank you for listening to Dairy Stream. If you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe and rate Dairy Stream. We value your feedback, and if there's something you'd like to hear, email us at podcast@dairyforward.com.